This week at Underdogs, we're breaking down the men's and women's Final Fours.
And we've got an early four baseball bets.
The cry goes up both far and near for Underdog.
Underdog.
Countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
By George, the dream is alive.
Underdog.
Then I guess there's only one thing left to do. Win the whole fucking thing.
It's the Underdogs back with a very special Final Four episode. And to prove that we're not just a basketball show, we'll have some early season MLB bets you can make, how you can take advantage of the fact that most people are freaking out and overreacting to the first week. I am your esteemed host, Jordan Brenner, joined by my less esteemed co-host, Peter Keating. Peter, how the hell are you today?
I'm full of steam, Jordan. I'm good. How are you?
I am great because I am enjoying the madness, and also because we're through our toughest part. We've written 47 articles, done 43 extra podcasts, and generally can come up for air again.
With one exception, right? I mean, there is an 11 seed in the Final Four, so there's still underdog elements of this to talk about. But you're right. I mean, we actually, you and I argue about this all the time. Like, by the time this time of year rolls, I don't know, who's playing, you know, Kansas, Kentucky, do I care? I mean, once the small fry are out, you know, and we're done pouring over the statistics for Richmond or Oakland or whoever, am I really supposed to keep track of these big time programs? I guess so. And I guess it's still a little bit exciting, but yes, the underdogs are over before we really even fully appreciate them.
Yes. Most fans are their attention grows as the tournament goes on. For us, we're like,
that's very
first
true.
Week. No more 15 seeds. What do we care? No, we're psyched for the Final Four, and we will get into some analysis of both the men's and women's tournaments. But I think the ultimate underdog first of this year, in terms of an underdog succeeding, has been the women's tournament as a whole. Its time has come, and obviously we saw that the Iowa LSU Elite Eight game set all sorts of viewership records. No men's game this year has matched that. In fact, the only basketball game in the past year was, I think, game five of the NBA Finals. It outdrew every baseball game in the past year. So very clearly, if you build it, they will come for women's basketball. But Peter, I'm sure you have something to say, and then I think there's a lesson to draw from this.
So first of all, about the game itself, right? What more could you want? A clash of styles, a clash of coaches, clash of players on the court, just a fantastically competitive game. I have to say, Jordan, not a particularly well-coached game. When you have Haley Van Lith on Caitlin Clark, while Caitlin Clark is literally setting scoring records every time you blink, and the same 5'7" overwhelmed guard is trying to stop her until there's about 4 minutes left in the game when LSU started frantically trying to switch. That was a little weird, I have to say.
Oh, you mean Marjorie Taylor Mulkey made a mistake? I'm so sad, Peter.
I don't think
watching her get out coached was one of the great highlights of my year.
I don't think it was ideologically driven, but I think it was drastically poor performance anyway. Yeah. I kind of wish somebody had said to her after the game, "Wow, you seemed really distracted instead of coaching well, were you?"
I wonder what her view on analytics is.
let's have her on and find out.
Yeah, you send that invitation, but Peter,
let me just say one.
All right, fine.
Thing
say
about that
say
game.
What you want to say
in,
about that
in
game.
The men's game, when sharpshooting underdogs or sharpshooting great 3-point shooting teams, okay, mm-hmm. go against dominant offensive rebounding teams in the tournament, mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. offensive rebounders almost always win. In fact, in the men's game, we have drawn the lesson that grabbing your own missed shots is actually a steadier source of possessions and increasing the value.
Well, for an underdog.
Well,
these
yeah.
were two overdogs scrapping it out.
But I mean, it is quite amazing that it's just amazing that Clark's specialty isn't just doing something interesting with the ball. It's bombing away on those threes. She has transformed the game, and they not only couldn't stop her, LSU wasn't getting points off their own second chances. So the stylistic clash was interesting, but it didn't really keep things as close. I mean, LSU did not look like the same team that dismantled its previous couple of opponents.
But I bigger than that, I think, is I think there's a lesson to draw in what's working in the women's tournament. And look, I don't want to overrate it. The men's tournament ratings aren't bad. In fact, I think they're up in some cases year over year. But there's a reason, I think, why more people are tuning in to the biggest women's games and the men's games. And that's that it has more recognizable stars who are there longer and more affiliated with their school. So you've got Caitlin Clark. You've got Paige Beckers. You've got, Juju Watkins is a freshman. But there's really recognizable names and stars who haven't been a lot of places. The men's tournament, you've have over 1,000 players in the transfer portal already. It's impossible to tell who's on what team year to year. And I'm telling you, long term, this is going to really, really, really continue to hurt the sport. And men's college basketball needs to figure its crap out and figure out if it wants to be a professional league or an amateur league. And if it's going to be a professional league, it has to do the things that professional leagues do to ensure competitive balance and interest, which is retain players longer in one space. It can't just be a year to year. I'm going to try this school this year, this school that year, yearly free agency. It's bad for fans who don't know who's on what team. It's bad for the quality of the game because there's no continuity, which we're going to get into with NC State in a second on my theory about what's going on with them. But the women's game, it's much more predictable. You can be much more attached and you can follow a player's career. It's just more fun.
Well, that's not only true.
It's brilliant, obvious, right? Is what you want to say?
It's true. It's brilliant. Almost tautological. That's how smart it is, Jordan. But there's a clear villain here, which is that the NCAA...
Kim Mulkey? Oh, damn.
The NCAA, by wanting to keep complete control over players' labor rights for so long, denying that this had any impact at all on amateurism, denying there was any value at all to giving players any chance to profit off their own work, right, for so long... had no plan in place, has no gradualism, has no negotiating position. Okay, NIL money, whatever. They're in a state of complete collapse, confusion. And so what do we have? When fans complain of professional teams that everybody's just in it for the money and everybody's a free agent and blah, team players go wherever they can get paid the most, as though we wouldn't all do the same thing. They're complaining about a system where it's often years and years of arbitration, right? And rookie salary caps before you get to be a free agent. Okay. Mm-hmm. We don't have free agents. And we don't have everybody becomes a free agent every single year for everybody in the NFL or the NBA or MLB. People think that's still too mercenary. Well, what you're getting in college basketball is total free agency for all, every minute of the day, every season of their careers, because there's no system in place to ensure that anybody stays anywhere anymore, because the old system said, you're going to stay here no matter what. You can't transfer. You know, there's all kinds of eligibility rules. You can't make money off an ice cream truck. You know, if you're a basketball player, it's just was so crazy for so long. The pressure has now blown up the whole bottle and the NCAA isn't ready for it and nobody's ready for it. And so we're going to get the worst of both worlds, right? We're going to get complete lack of continuity and complete chaos, but without any specified labor rights or injury or disability or even academic protections. And so this is what's been brewing all these years, and now it's here. So I hope the NCAA is happy. They should just get the hell out of the business altogether.
So let's segue from that into the men's Final Four, and particularly...
Wait. Hold on. Before you do that, there is more to the story than about... The cool mix of stars and recognizable players and upstarts than just continuity. After all, Jordan, South Carolina replaced all five of its starters this year, and they went undefeated, right? I mean, Juju Watkins, as you mentioned, is a freshman. There's something more going on than just them players staying for a long time in women's college hoops. It's that there's this amazing mix of great programs and programs that are just good enough to give them a run for their money, but probably not beat them. So you have what you always say you love, which is the great chance for a couple of upsets early on and then dominant teams showing their stuff later on. And I think that's what people love to see.
Okay, so getting to the men's Final Four, I think there's a real natural segue between what we were just talking about in turnover and into NC State's miraculous run, winning 9 straight elimination games to be here. They're 11 seed. NC State's team is 2 things. It's very, very old and basically composed almost entirely of transfers. DJ Horn, DJ Burns, O'Connell, et cetera, et cetera. These guys have all been elsewhere. And
right now, let's focus in on that for 1 second, because you've identified this and stuff you've written. In the old days, when a team was very old,
yes,
it usually meant they were experienced together, right?
Yes.
Now,
that's what I'm about to get to. Yes.
Like,
thank you.
You're pointing out you can get old, but also have less continuity. I mean, that's fascinating.
Yes. So, as I was saying, this team has recently come together. Basketball is a sport where the more you play together, the better you get. So, because there's so much turnover, and you used to think about teams with a lot of freshmen in this way, right? One and done, they need time to gel. Well, now, as we just said, it's this older team with basketball experience, physical strength, toughness, etc., but it takes them time to gel as a group. So the theory I will posit is that this NC State team is simply much better now than they were even at midseason, because it took time for these parts to come together. And that what you have now is light years from it, because you do have an older, experienced team. So I think it's going to change the way we evaluate teams in the tournament going forward. We're going to continue to measure this with our bracket breaker stuff. But Peter, this team now has figured out how to play together, is my point. How to play through DJ Burns, how to incorporate good guard play. They've got a 3-man rotation inside with Middlebrooks, Diarra, and Burns, that is really the envy of most schools. So I don't look at NC State as an 11 seed anymore. If you started the season over, this is sustainable. They would be a top ACC team. They beat Duke, you may not be aware of this, 2 times now.
I heard somewhere that they beat Duke.
Some of us are in mourning, but look, this team is legit. Now, what chance do we give them against Purdue? First of all, it's freaking hilarious that Purdue, just when you thought they'd conquered all their demons and reached the Final Four, they have to beat a double-digit seed one more time. Peter, will the ghost of Giant Killer's past come get them?
Or are the gods not done with testing Purdue yet, right? What's interesting about what you just said with specific reference to NC State is that, look, when teams gel, sometimes they just do better. They get better at doing what they were already doing, right? Sometimes a coach has imprinted a system. Sometimes the first couple of players who really took root shape how the team plays. In this case, Jordan, not only are they better, they're fundamentally different, aren't they? I mean, with so much of the offense moving through the players you just mentioned, specifically through Burns, who's getting more minutes, scoring more, rebounding more, doing everything more, everything's flowing through different players than it was earlier in the season. That's tough to measure. We can say that NC State's playing 5 or 7 points per 100 possessions better than they were at the start of the year. That's a lot. That's enough to drag its average ranking in our power ratings up a whole bunch of spots. It's enough to be about 10 points stronger, 10 percentage points, better odds of pulling an upset against a team like Purdue. Now, whether that means they're a good bet on the money line, probably not, because they've also gotten famous and now people like them, right? But what's interesting here is it's not just that they're better, they're different. So it's almost like we should be, and this is something we just don't do in our model because there never used to be any evidence it was worth it to do this. It's almost like you have to take their last 10 or 12 games and say, that's the team, not the first 15 or 18 games.
Peter, before we switch over to the women's Final Four, the other semifinal doesn't qualify as a bracket breakers game, but there's a decided underdog. UConn's a 12-point favorite over Alabama. Alabama's plus 525 on the money line. You've been the Alabama whisperer this year. I believe when we were picking teams outside of the top 3 or 4 seeds a few weeks ago, you mentioned Alabama. I mocked you because they didn't play a defense. Joke's on me. They're in the Final Four. Can Alabama's high-octane, fast-paced offense somehow keep up with UConn and do enough on defense to score an upset?
I don't know if they can score an upset, but they're definitely not 12 points difference between these teams. As far as I would say, it's not a bracket breakers matchup, but draw your attention to 2 things. One of the things you just were talking about, this experience, but actually a lack of continuity at the beginning of the season, Alabama, 63rd in D1 experience this year, 276th in minutes continuity with last year's roster. They took a while to come together also. You know, they had a stretch around Thanksgiving where they were losing almost every game. Late in the season, they suffered from fatigue and injuries, but they have had a great tournament, and they have not been hindered by the big split between their offensive and defensive performance. And they did put an end to right. UNC and to Clemson. I'll say one other quick thing to watch for. Alabama has a ginormous split, maybe the biggest in the country, one of them, between their average possession length on offense and on defense. They disrupt on defense. They play really fast on offense. They take a huge amount of threes. It's like they're what we call a gambling giant.
They are the most analytically inclined offense in college basketball. They have really embraced the shot chart, the optimal shot chart, which is threes and shots at the rim. They take very few mid-range shots. Peter, jumping over to the women's side, you've got South Carolina's an 11.5-point favorite over NC State. Iowa, 2.5 over UConn. We've been on UConn. It's hard to think of UConn as an underdog. But as a 3 seed, we both liked them for the Final Four. They got there. Paige Beckers versus Caitlin Clark. Some great inside matchups as well. Which way are you leaning? I still feel like UConn's lack of depth is going to catch up to them at some point with 5 players injured. But you've been sort of saying that doesn't matter as long as they stay out of foul trouble, right?
Well, yeah, but they're going to, you know, team that beats Iowa is going to need to throw bodies at Caitlin Clark, right? In a way that, surprisingly enough, LSU kind of didn't. And UConn's depth really may cost them here. But Beckers is out of her mind. I mean, it's fascinating to see. So, I mean, I think it's a pick 'em. I take the points.
I like Iowa in this one. I'll lay the 2.5.
It's hard
Real
to bet against
Caitlin
Clark.
For the underdog show, does underdog NC State have any? Ray talked about them on the men's side as a big dog. Even bigger dog on the women's side. Do they have a shot plus 550 on the money line to upset the mighty Gamecocks?
Let's say this is one of those situations where when players say their Final Four was their goal, let's be happy with reaching the Final Four. South Carolina is remarkably deep. We've talked about this. There's nothing they don't do well. And I think they're going to make a really interesting national championship opponent. Let's just say that. No. There's like a 10 or 12%, not a 16 or 20% chance of this happening.
Right. And I just don't see, look, credit to NC State for getting here, but I don't see some of the underdog qualities that we've liked in other long shots to beat a team like
South Carolina. They're excellent defensive rebounders. They do not cough up the ball, but they don't force turnovers. They're not great on the offensive board, so they have to shoot really well, and South Carolina has great defense.
Right. Well, we're excited to watch the games. Hit us up if you have any thoughts on what's happening with these underdogs in these tournaments, and we'll be back to remind you that we're not just a basketball show with a little quick baseball segment right after
baseball
this.
Baseball season.
Underdog. 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 Underdog.
We're back. And if you've been totally focused on March Madness, you may have missed the start of baseball season. But here's the opportunity. We're a week in. People are already overreacting. And if you look at betting lines, that may create some opportunities, or conversely, people may be sleeping and you may be able to pounce on something you like. So we're going to give you a couple futures bets that we like that we can track throughout the year. Peter, why don't you start us off with a couple things in the NL, your favorite league, which is led by the defeated New York Mets.
So I can't start off by talking about how I heard a radio show this week, seriously taking calls about whether Yankees would go 162-0. I think they were joking, but I'm not sure. So I'm going to write that whole league off. You're right. Let's start with the National League.
All right, let's do it.
Jordan, if you look at the odds right now of teams to make the playoffs, okay, and you see who has the best value, we've talked about how we think the Padres are going to have a better season because of statistical indicators. We've talked about how much we love the Cincinnati Reds. Public's now in on both of those. There is value on one team. That is the Pittsburgh Pirates to make the playoffs plus 270. They've started the season 5-0. It's a small sample, but Jordan, you've got to love the mix of young and for them, I mean, it's got to be cheap. So it's young, cheap talent that's brewing there. And if you think about some of the upside of the players, Henry Davis, catcher, former number one pick, great, huge potential. Brian Reynolds, homegrown. We talked about how some of the best values in free agency are now in outfield defense. And we joked about it. They're the ones who signed Michael A. Taylor, and he's hitting 500. Yep. That won't last, but he's great on defense. This team's putting together, and the surprise awesome pick and a cool pick for rookie of the year at plus 1500, Jared Jones. He hits 100. He had a great first start. He can locate a really fast slider in the zone. This is an exciting team that's coming together, and you know who's coming up? Who's coming up later in the year? Probably too late to be rookie of the year, but number one overall pick last year, Paul Skeens, who was in double A already and who's lights out, is coming to join the show. This is a fun young team. This is what we thought the Reds were last year. This is the Pirates this year. Give me the Pirates to make the playoffs and throw some money on Jared Jones to win rookie of the year.
All right. Anything else you like in the NL?
Jordan, it's time to go bargain garbage bin hunting right now. Aaron Nola had a terrible first start, but I like his Cy Young odds. He's a great strikeout pitcher. You saw the true Aaron Nola in the playoffs last year when he was very effective. And if you watched him over the last year, it looked like just something was just wrong, because there was, but it wasn't sustainable. It was bad luck. He gave up a ton of home runs with men on base. He gave up a ton of hits with men in scoring position. If he just pitches to his level and has a good season for a team that rightfully thinks they should have been in the World Series last year, this year, I think he's got a cool shot.
Got it. All right. Switching to the American League, where I've done a little work. I'm going to reiterate a couple of picks I liked the beginning of the offseason, because I still think they're valid and there's value there, and it's worth jumping on. The first is the Mariners are still plus 250 to win the American League West. That's the third likeliest odds. I understand Houston and Texas are the more revered teams there, but nobody's got a starting rotation like the Mariners. And while I think we've seen that doesn't matter as much come playoff time, when you can go this deep with quality pitching in the regular season, it really prevents slumps. And it gives you a chance to win every game. I mean, so Luis Castillo, Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, Bryce Miller, and on and on and on. This team is loaded with pitching depth, and we liked some of the offensive moves they made, particularly Mitch Garver during the offseason, Jorge Polanco. You know, they're just not hitting yet, but there's a lot more potential for this team offensively than last year. So I think...
Would it shock you if Julio Rodriguez had an MVP season at any moment?
Not even remotely.
And obviously the betting lines are valuing Houston and Texas at like their peak players, right? But would you rather rely on Scherzer and Verlander, or would you rather rely on Kirby and Castillo? I mean, Seattle has legit two aces, and they're younger and healthy. They're going to be there all year.
Right. I think it's a fun bet to make. You're getting pretty good odds. So watch the Mariners to win the West. Even more so, and again, this is one we touched on a few weeks ago, but I still like it, is the Kansas City Royals are plus 1,100 to win the AL Central. In a bad division, I still think there's a lot of value there. And again, you talked about Pittsburgh doing it on the cheap. Well, Kansas City also has a mix of some younger, talented guys, and they brought in veterans who can perform, like Seth Lugo, right? Guys to buffer the rotation, a Michael Wacha. But then obviously Cole Reagans is a long shot Cy Young candidate, first of all. I mean, you know, I saw an article calling him a lefty DeGrom potentially. They've added more offense. Bobby Witt, Vinny Pescatini, these guys can continue to progress. Again, we're not asking this team to be the odds on favorite, but at plus 1,100 to beat out teams like Detroit and Minnesota and the White Sox and Cleveland to win the division. Tell me what I'm missing here. Why can't Kansas City win this?
Well, I just think Minnesota is by far the best team with Pablo Lopez as a better pitcher than anybody on the Royals, except maybe
Reagans.
I mean,
come on.
Yeah. And yeah, by the way, we were on Reagans in the middle of last year. Remember this show? Yep. This show claims
you,
credit
not me,
for Reagans.
You. Yes.
But Minnesota has, it's unfortunate that Royce Lewis is hurt again, but that's a really good team. And I think Cleveland just has less. Cleveland and Detroit both have less distance to go. You're asking the Royals to improve by something like 30 games. I think they're look, if they win 75, 77 games, it's a good season for them. That would be a giant leap forward. I just think it's a little leap too far, but that's why it's plus 1,100. Sure,
yeah,
why
just
not?
Just lay $10 at 11-1 odds, and you know, you either forget about it or you make $100.
This time of year, you really want to bet on teams you're going to have fun with, one way or another, right? They'll be in it, and they'll be fun and surprising to everyone else. It'll be cool.
How fun was it last year for us with these? You know, we made these picks a little later, but we were on the Reds, we were on the Diamondbacks. Those were fun teams to. So get a little Pittsburgh in your life, get a little Kansas City in your life, right? What could go wrong?
Yeah, and you look a little, get a little Bobby Witt, right? I mean, wouldn't surprise you either if Bobby Witt posted an MVP campaign.
Right, Peter, the last thing, I was really intrigued by the Mets at plus 13,000 to have the fewest wins in baseball. I really want to pull the trigger, but...
I'll tell you one thing about that, Jordan. Every time you think one of our teams is the worst team in baseball, just look up and look west, because Colorado is worse than them. So that's why I can't place that bet. As discouraged as I am this early in the year, I don't think they're quite the worst.
All right. Well, the sports calendar rolls on. We'll be back next week with some Masters talk. We'll be looking ahead to the playoffs and in basketball and hockey. We've got more baseball. The Kentucky Derby's around the corner. So as always, the Underdogs is your place to be. Until then, I'm Jordan. That's Peter. Adios.
Wait till Alonzo walks. Then they might be the worst.